Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Mitchell Stelnick. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Justin Killinger. This action is an appeal of a decree of dissolution, a marriage that was entered into in August of 2006. The decree was entered in 2018, I believe. There were children of the marriage, but there were no issues as it related to custody. The parties stipulated to that. Really, three main issues that that we addressed in our brief, and I'll try to limit my factual information to those. One was the distribution of an asset that was a limited liability company called Just In Feeds. That was a business that was certainly marital. Nobody's disputing that. It began as a sole proprietorship, and then throughout the term of the marriage, it became a limited liability company with each of the parties owning 50% of the membership interest. And that business was primarily for the purchase of feed for livestock and then the resale of that. The parties stipulated to a valuation of the business that was done. We hired a valuator, and the parties split the cost of that. I believe that's in the record. But the value was, I believe, $335,000 or somewhere around there. Both parties testified at trial that they did not want the asset distributed to them. Appalee had already moved to a different community and testified.
And she has a full-time job.
Right, right, in a different community.
Did your client have any employment other than this company?
Not at the time of trial, and he did not testify any differently to that. And he did have child support obligations that were temporary in nature until the time of trial as well, so it would have been difficult for him to get another source of income. There's no dispute this was his primary source of income as of the time of trial.
Was there any evidence about the marketability of the business that was presented at trial?
I don't believe that there was, other than his testimony. Well, the appellee, I recall, testified that she didn't have any knowledge as to, you know, whether they could get a sale price of $335,000. But I think she testified she didn't believe that they could, but her primary testimony was, I don't know. And I don't recall whether Mr. Killinger testified to that or not at the time of trial, without the benefit of reviewing the record before you. But he did testify the business had significant debts, and that he had tried to secure a loan prior to the proceeding, or prior to the time of trial, to purchase the interest of the appellee, and he was only able to secure the potential of a loan of $40,000, and that he feared that if there was a large judgment against him, that he wouldn't be able to obtain the necessary credit to continue properly operating the business, because of course he would need the credit to be able to purchase the feed and then resell it. What the trial court decided was that, let me back up. So what he asked the court to do was either to distribute the business to the appellee, which we don't dispute would not have been practical. So what he asked was that the business be sold and then the profits, or the what was received as part of the sale, be distributed to the parties.
Why is it such a burden for him to just sell it if that's what he wants to do? He was awarded it. He could sell it.
Well, and I think that's probably the point of the previous question was, I don't think that it would have been able to be sold for the value that it was valued.
But you indicated there was no evidence presented in that area. How, you know,
well,
if the judge
don't recall
wasn't
if
given
was.
That evidence, didn't it make the most sense, since this was primarily run by your client, to just award him the business?
I certainly understand why the court would have done that. The argument that we made, however, was if he were to be awarded the business, that the resulting judgment that he was going to receive, because this was by far the largest asset of the marriage, was going to result in some sort of property judgment against him that would make the ability for him to get credit to even operate the business almost impossible.
Did the court take that into consideration, though, in the length of time it gave your client to pay the property judgment? At a fairly low annual amount.
So I don't know if that was why the court entered the order that it did, but the court did order $14,000 annual payments towards the judgment, and I don't recall right offhand whether there's interest on that or not, but it was $14,000 a year towards the judgment. I would argue, though, regardless of the length of time to repay it, he's still going to have a pretty large judgment against him, and for any limited liability company, especially a small one like that, he's going to need to be able to co-sign for any loans or lines of credit or anything. And
but your client agreed to go with whatever this particular evaluator would value the business.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess.
Well, I don't.
I mean, why do that if you just want to sell it? You know, I mean, he's kind of put himself in that position of maybe this valuation is going to come in higher than I think. But stipulating to that, didn't he kind of put himself?
Well, I don't disagree that we're not arguing that the valuation of the business was incorrect. Neither of the parties are professionals and able to say, here's what the value of the business is. So we got the valuation, and the determination was not to pay for an additional valuation, which is the type of evidence that I think the court would have needed to receive. I don't dispute, and my client doesn't dispute, that the valuation of the business is correct. What I analogized it to at the time of trial was similar to a marriage. Would say, imagine a marriage with smaller assets, but the one major asset they have is a house, and so we know what the value of the house is, but neither party has the type of financial wherewithal separately to be able to continue to make the payments on the house. And you see sales not uncommonly in similar situations through those types of divorce actions.
Doesn't the case law, though, say with regard to selling an asset or awarding it to a party that it does boil down to the discretion of the trial court?
It does. And I don't dispute that the case law also says that a forced sale or a judicial sale is not a favored resolution. Mm-hmm. But we think in this case, the end result ended up being a large judgment against the appellant, which will make his ability to get credit to even operate the business very difficult to do. And I think the evidence for that was, before there was ever a large judgment against him, he testified that he tried to get a loan to purchase the assets of the or purchase the interest of the business from the appellee, and the largest he was able to get was $40,000 was the largest offer. So
I'm perplexed, though, you know, in looking at the income summary that was contained in the valuation report. I mean, his operating income of the business was pretty decent. In 2015, it was almost $81,000. 2016, it was $140,000. So that's all sales and costs minus deductions. That's operating capital.
I agree.
And then it dropped in 2017, but at the same time, there was a dramatic uptick in the deductions, which the record didn't seem to supply the information to support that. But the only thing I could kind of speculate about is it might be related to this cattle inventory that he started to add in 2016, but I don't know. So I can't really tell from the record. But so my point is, there's sufficient operating capital to pay $10,000 a year is certainly reasonable given the kind of operating income the business was generating.
Well, all I can say is we disagree that he was generating sufficient capital to be able to run the business, because my understanding is that he would need to have a certain amount of credit to be able to do some of the feed purchases.
What evidence is there in the record regarding that operating line of credit and how much had to be borrowed? Because his long-term liabilities are fairly minimal for this operation.
I don't recall that the parties addressed any sort of line of credit in the evidence at trial. He did address his concern about the debts that the company had as part of his testimony, and he did testify his difficulty in the ability to get credit is also was part of his.
Because the short-term notes, there really isn't even anything till 2016, and that's $5,000.
He testified at the time of trial, and I guess without the specific citations are in my brief, but he mentioned a number of loans against various items that were business property. I think a lot of it was for equipment that were separate notes that he had co-signed on. So I think those ended up probably being considered marital debts as well. But those, and those are listed in the brief, but it was a lot more than $5,000.
Well, those are probably the long-term liabilities, which it reflects about $79,000 in 2016.
And I don't recall if this was in the record or not, but he did have a lot of help from the appellee in terms of bookkeeping, and I suspect the bookkeeping was not quite as good after the separation of the parties, which might account for not as good evidence as it relates to some of the debts against the company. So,
Counsel, I know we've taken you over, but I have a quick question on, and obviously we'll consider all of your arguments contained in your brief, but on the child support calculation, your argument is we should use a longer, the court should have used a longer period to average the income.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you don't take issue with the numbers that the court used in its calculation, just the period of time?
Right. The court used, and what I'm referring to is specifically the appellant's income information. The court used straight out of tax documents, and so we don't dispute that the use of the tax documents to determine his income was inappropriate. What we're saying is, and we realize the child support guidelines and case law is 3 years.
We understand your argument to that a longer period of time would be more representative.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time did we take appellant over?
1 minute and 16 seconds.
Would you please add that to the appellee's time?
Good afternoon. May it please
Good afternoon.
Mr. Stalick. My name is Susan Koenig. I represent Elizabeth Killinger, who is present today. She is the plaintiff, brought the case, and now is the appellee. With regard to the business, which is the primary concern, I believe, here. Always the test is, well, the division of property is the issue. The division of property and the appropriateness of that division of property is fairness and reasonableness under the circumstances of the parties. And I think the courts identified the issue pretty well. You know, Mr. Killinger says, well, just give her this business. My client works full-time as an extension educator and has really throughout the marriage. Mr. Killinger has started, well, they started this business together in 2011. It became an LLC of which they were 50% owners in, I think, 2014. I'm not exactly certain on the exact date, and operated that business with Mrs. Killinger doing some work in that business, which decreased as their family grew and she became more involved with the children, but it was really Mr. Killinger's business.
Given that neither party wanted to be awarded this business, wouldn't it have been more appropriate for the district court to have just ordered the sale?
A judicial sale is always an issue, I think, and I think the courts don't favor those. It incurs additional costs. I think that, and then, you know, there's the Kellner case where one of the parties is ordered to sell it, and that on behalf of the other party, and the court really didn't believe that that was appropriate because it does give one party the ability to, I guess I think, sabotage a sale or use a straw man or do some things like that. So you really have to have a judicial sale to do it fairly. And those are costly and
But
and
if in this case, for example, if Mr. Killinger is compelled to have to sell and he ends up having to sell it for less than what it was valued for, isn't that a detriment to him? Wouldn't it have been more equitable to just allow the property to be sold?
Well,
or not the property, the business.
The business to be sold. It also deprives him of his livelihood, in essence. The court, in fact, asked him specifically if he had looked for work, and he said no, he hadn't. You know, he's kind of taken that risk, I guess, at this point by delaying this process and going in that route.
At the same time, he could get more than the $335,000, and he would be entitled to keep that excess.
Absolutely.
Which your client may not feel was fair in retrospect either, right? So
absolutely.
It cuts both ways.
It does. It does. You know, this is the major asset of the marriage, and the court based upon the evidence that was presented, made the decision to allocate it to the defendant. I don't think there's anything in the record that shows that that's an abuse of discretion.
And had the trial court ordered the sale? I suppose the same standard applies, right? Is it an abuse of discretion?
It does. I think the standards is exactly the same. You know, there's the argument that Mr. Stelic was making about credit and the inability to obtain credit. The only evidence in the record about that is Mr. Killinger's testimony. There's no evidence from an accountant. There's no evidence from a banker supporting that and indicating, you know, that there's a problem for him to do that. He just says, I tried to borrow some money and all I could do was $40,000. And I'm not exactly even sure if that was sort of like, well, I'll pay her $40,000 and be done with it, which is clearly not an equitable resolution for my client. With regard to the child support, obviously we believe that the three-year average is appropriate. There, you know, the court is a court of equity. The court can use other periods of time, clearly has done that on some limited occasions, but generally the court has always said the three-year time frame is an appropriate one, and it takes into account the fluctuations mm-hmm. in income. Which
would you agree, though, that evidence, at least in our record, shows that 2016 was an unusual year?
It was their highest year.
Mm-hmm.
If you look back, though, this is a business that has grown every year up until 2016. So I think there's evidence in the record from 2011 through 2017. Every year their income has gone up from that business to 2016. 2017 was a significant reduction. You know, there are many possibilities about why that is, but that's also the year that this dissolution action was pending mm-hmm. throughout the whole year, because I believe it was filed in January, and you know, things hadn't been going so well in the marriage.
And the court took into consideration 2017 in its three-year average.
Yes, it
right?
did.
So.
Yeah, it was 15, 16, and 17. As
and
far
Mr.
As
Stelic argues that it was commodity prices being high in 2016. Is there anything in the record to show that they were dramatically different in 2017?
Well, I believe Mr. Killinger testified something, a little bit about, you know, cattle prices had changed and commodity prices had changed. But I think that's really about the only evidence of that in the record. That I don't have any further argument.
Any questions? We have no further questions.
Thank you.
Appellant's out of time. So counsel, thank you very much for appearing today. You are excused and your case is submitted.